If we look to Joanna Penn, she switched from podcasting or audio blogging to video blogging because she needed to make her podcasts more search engine friendly. While search engines can crawl the keywords and text accompanying a podcast, they can't crawl the sound file of the podcast itself. In 2008, Google added the ability to search and transcribe the audio from videos uploaded on YouTube, making video blogging more search engine friendly. However, video blogging and transmedia production is not always about pure marketing. Sometimes it is simply about spreading opinions or ideas. An example of this can be found with video blogger That Girl Tyson. While Tyson admits that producing her video blog is partly about promoting herself as a writer, it is also obvious from the following interview that her video blog is all about expressing herself and sharing her passions and opinions. We recorded the interview remotely. I pre-recorded my questions for Tyson on webcam. She then recorded her answers and mixed the whole thing together as an episode of her video blog, That Girl Tyson.
Here we are, another week, another vlog. This one is going to be a little bit different because I am going to help out a friend, Greg McQueen. First, I'm going to let him introduce himself. No, he's not here with me. He has recorded a little bit of a video and I'm going to put that in so you can understand who he is and why he's here today.
Hi, my name is Greg McQueen and I'm a multimedia design and communication student from Aarhus Business Academy in Denmark. And I'm doing a final project towards my degree. And part of that project, I'm producing a series of podcasts called Transmedia for the Rest of Us.
Some of you might be wondering, how the heck do I know this guy? And the simple answer to that is the wonderful world of social networking. To put it simply, without Transmedia, I wouldn't know anything about him. I wouldn't have this vlog, you wouldn't find me on Twitter, I wouldn't have a blog, and I certainly wouldn't have a Facebook fan page. All of these examples are transmedia. Now, for some strange and inexplicable reason, Greg has asked me if I will answer a few questions for him. And this is how it's gonna work. He's gonna ask me questions via his recordings, and I'm gonna answer them through here. Then I'm gonna splice it all together and produce it as a vlog, and he's gonna put it all together and release it as a podcast. All right, so let's get this show on the road.
So my first question is, how did you go from being Tyson to That Girl Tyson? And what I mean by that is, how did you go from someone who maybe just enjoys the internet, is an observer of the internet, to becoming a content creator and actually sharing yourself and what you do online?
Now that's kind of an interesting question, because the transition from being just regular old Tyson on the street, walking around, doing nothing real all that special, to somebody who's vlogging and blogging and tweeting and Facebooking every single day of her life has been a really rapid transition, and it's also been a really strange one, because I never set out to have subscribers on YouTube or followers on Twitter. The real reason that I did it was because I was bored. I know that sounds bonkers, but it's true. First up, there was this moment of, I'm just going to give it a go. As it goes, it's kind of fun, and it keeps me from going a little bit insane.
The other thing I'd like to know is what you get out of producing the content that you do, and what do you get out of sharing it online? You've been doing it for a while now, and you do it on a weekly, if not a fortnightly basis, so very regularly. So what do you feel that you get out of producing this content and sharing it with not just friends and family, but basically people like me, halfway across the world, who've never actually really met you? What do you get out of it? And the other part of this question is, what do you feel someone like me gets out of it? I've found you online and I follow your video blog. What do you feel I get out of watching your blogs pretty much on a weekly basis?
I like this question because it's pretty simple. What do I get out of these vlogs and blogs? Other than my rampant thoughts being contained in one specific spot, I also get the pleasure of meeting some really cool people. But what do the ones who do watch it get out of it, and what do you get out of it? Honestly, I hope a laugh. And I think they like the fact that it's pretty much a guarantee that I am going to make a fool of myself. Each day, every week, no matter what.
So without trying to sound too kind of fancy-spancy about it, is there some kind of strategy behind what you're doing? You produce content on a really regular basis. And a lot of people produce content online because they want to promote something or they want to spread an idea rather than just sharing for sharing's sake. So what is that for you? Is there some kind of aspect to it for you that's, for example, promotional, or is there some kind of strategy behind it or eventual goal that you're trying to get to by producing the content that you do and sharing it online?
Well, I might as well come out and say it. I do have ulterior motives. While this whole adventure sort of started because I didn't want to be bored and idle hands and the devil's playthings and all of that, I am actually a writer, and it's very encouraged for writers and authors to have a personal platform where they can connect with their fans. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not published. I write, I store a lot of stuff on my hard drive, and I hope and pray that one day somebody will find my genius and give me a contract. And as this has grown over the last year or two, it has taken on a message, and that message really is love for all. I know it sounds hippie and corny and a little bit weird, but it's true. I just want people to know that we should love each other and the world would just be a 10 times better place. And it's not even a new message. Tons of people have come with this message before and we've completely ignored them. So why would people listen to me? I don't know, but there it is.
How do you find ideas for blog posts and video blogs and stuff like that? Well, where do you get your inspirations from? And how do you go about producing them? Of course, you know, writing a blog is fairly simple. You just kind of open the web browser and start writing. But what's the process of you actually producing a video blog, for example?
I find the more technical side of things not very entertaining, but it's actually what I'm asked the most is, where do I come up with my ideas? They come from my brain, and I draw from everything that's around me. When I'm at the gym, I'm thinking. When I'm in my car, I've pretty much vlogged about everything under the sun, it feels like. Now, how do I produce my vlogs? I record them on my little tiny camera, which I need a new one. It's just a Canon, it's a small camera. And then I transfer that onto my computer, which is a laptop. And I edit it through a software program called PowerDirector. I only upload it through YouTube, and then I share the YouTube links through Twitter and Facebook, and then other people share them for me. And now I produce a vlog each week, and in the beginning it was rough because it used to take up so much of my time, but I've kind of got it down to an art now. We're really just talking about a couple of hours each week that I dedicate to my vlog, recording it, producing it, editing it, getting it out there.
You blog about a lot of different things, and you've already spoken here about how you find ideas and how you find inspiration for the video blog. But what are the limits? What are the things that you won't talk about on the video blog? And where's kind of the limit taste-wise, I guess? I mean, you talk about a lot of different things. For example, today I noticed that you'd posted, or it was the last episode of That Girl Tyson, where you posted about masturbation. And of course, for some, that's kind of quite an edgy subject, I guess. So knowing that you kind of go that close to the edge, where is the limit? Where is the edge for you on things that you are willing to talk about into a webcam?
I have done a wide range of subjects. I know that there is a chance that I'm going to offend people. I know there is a chance that people are going to disagree with me, and that is the beauty of this world. I like to think that even when I touch on vlog subjects and blog subjects that are a little unconventional, I do it in a way that is both engaging and not crass and vulgar. I never intend to be crass and vulgar. I try to approach it with humor, and I try to present it in a manner that other people can learn from and engage with without feeling uncomfortable. I am pretty sure that I have missed this mark on a few occasions. As for things that I won't talk about, there isn't much, honestly, because I personally think that if you're on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, you're subjected to way worse than me.
You've been doing this for a while now, and I'm sure you've learned some valuable lessons along the way. So what advice would you give someone who's just starting out, maybe with video blogging? What advice would you give to them to kind of keep them on the right track and keep them going and keep them blogging?
You know, I've actually had people come to me and ask me what it is they can do to make their vlog successful. And I really don't have an answer for them because I don't actually have a successful vlog. In the grand scheme of things, it's a very small base, which I am perfectly content with. The only two pieces of advice I really have for people who want to expand their horizons and start a video blog or a blog is to be safe and be themselves. That's all I can tell them to do. Be themselves, be engaging, be funny, be smart, have their opinion. Don't waver their opinion because of the comments that they get or the amount of dislikes they get. And be safe. Do not put out personal information that they do not want people to know. Their address, their phone number. These things, they should remain private because you don't really know who's going to be watching your vlog or commenting on your blog. And while I do fully support interacting with your people and the viewers and all the ones that connect with you, just be smart about it. Be safe. Especially if you're a child, because there are some weirdos out there. Me included.
Although That Girl Tyson's reasons for video blogging aren't all about marketing. Between her video blog and text-based blog, where she shares extracts from her writing, she displays a consistent form of personal branding. Tyson's videos always begin and end with consistent graphics, text, and music that leaves you in no doubt as to what you're about to see. This branding remains consistent across Tyson's text-based blog, photo blog, her Twitter stream, and Facebook page. Mark Prensky, an author of several books about growing up and learning in the digital age, coined the phrase digital natives. As you'll hear in a recent interview I conducted with Mark, a digital native is someone who has almost an instinctive understanding of digital technology. Examples like That Girl Tyson prove that digital natives also have an understanding of concepts like personal branding. You've kind of coined this term digital natives. Could you kind of define that a little bit more for us?
Well, the digital natives are the people who were born in the digital age. They grew up with digital technology. They're very comfortable with it. They don't know everything about it necessarily, but they're not afraid of it, and they want to use it, and they know that it's a tool in their lives.
And can you talk a little bit about, because often technology is viewed as something that maybe gets overused, or particularly with younger generations. I know I have a daughter, for example. She uses my iPad. She's got her own iPod. And can you talk a little bit about how, you know, whether or not there is a balance between overuse of technology and where you think the balance might be?
Well, what we are now in is a machine-human age. And so the important thing is to find a good symbiosis between the two. And that obviously involves a balance. And when you find the right balance, and that depends on what the brain does well, what the technology does well, and how you put them together to solve whatever your problem is, that's what I call digital wisdom.
And how do you think we can kind of, because I'm in my 40s, I'm a slightly older generation, I think I'm partly a digital native, but how do you think, for example, we can embrace the younger generations being digital natives, perhaps how we can talk to them through education and things like that? How can we kind of embrace what they do rather than look at it as something that's, you know, that's a little bit off?
There's an interesting paradox, because one of the biggest complaints is that they don't talk and that they always have their heads in their devices. But part of that is because we don't talk to them and we don't ask them about what they're interested in. And the most important thing to have with the young people is a conversation about what they like, not a judgmental conversation, but a conversation where you let them tell you what is the advantage, why they do what they do, how they see it, and from them we will learn, and at the same time they will learn from us.
Is there anything specific you think that the younger generations can teach us about technology and about their use of technology?
Well, for example, this is the first generation that grew up with music in their ears all the time. And they use music often in a very different way than we use music. They have particular music for relaxation, particular music for various activities that they do in their day. And so we should understand that, learn how they do that, learn how they communicate with instant messaging, why they do it. Well, we have now written speech, different kinds of communication are coming in. And essentially, they are the harbingers of advanced human capabilities.
While YouTube's own statistics prove the popularity of video online, where does that leave other forms of media, such as audio? When Apple released iTunes 4.9 back in 2005, the ability to subscribe to audio podcasts via RSS feeds became possible for anyone owning a Macintosh, and 2 years later with the release of iTunes 7, a Windows-driven computer. However, RSS feeds are no longer the only way to distribute audio across the internet. In 2009, Mark Rock founded Audioboo, a platform that allows users to record audio clips on their iPhone or Android device and upload them directly online. Audioboo has transformed producing podcasts from something that might take hours to record and days to edit to something that can be done as easily as sending a tweet. how did Audio Boo all start? Because you started out with Static TV and then you went into Play Jam. How did you kind of move from that, which is very much video, into starting Audio Boo and, moving into audio, really?
So Audio Boo started out really as a project with Channel 4. So Channel 4 was going to launch some new digital stations. This is in 2008, one of which was going to be a competitor to Radio 4. And as part of that, they asked the company I was running then, which is a kind of technology R&D business, what they could do to kind of that kind of high-end talk radio. So we then came up with the idea of mobile app creates really high-quality audio but adds additional metadata like photo, location, etc. To make it much more searchable, very much in the kind of citizen journalism mode. And then at the end of 2008, of course, the economy crashed. Channel 4 decided not to launch Channel 4 Radio, and we essentially just thought, fuck it, we'll launch Audio Boo. So I always call it a bit of an accidental startup. We really know nothing about audio, didn't know anything about radio, and this was very much kind of technology play. And so we launched it in March 2009, very much as a kind of side project, and then we're quite amazed when the BBC and The Guardian and loads of other people started to use it. And that's when we began to look at it as a business. Where it probably worked is all the innovation in audio has been around music, quite obviously, and the kind of spoken word stuff that we specialise on is kind of unsexy, and also radio just hasn't innovated in 50 years. You know, I think we came along as a bit of a piece of fresh air. And again, part of that whole kind of democratisation of both creating content but then also distributing it, which, you know, bypass traditional broadcast channels. Flickr's done it for images, YouTube sorts of video. No one had really ever done it, you know, for the kind of audio that you want to create and share.
How would you describe Audio Boo? I mean, if I was just some guy on the street and you bumped into me and said, hey, I'm Mark Rock, I'm the guy who, started Audio Boo. How would you describe Audio Boo from your standpoint? What is it to you?
It's tricky. I mean, the quickest elevator pitch is that it's Twitter for the spoken word. If we're stuck in the elevator, I think it brings an amazing way for people to store their kind of digital lives in voice format. So that could be, you know, the way I use it, which is very much recording my kids and knowing I've got 2 years worth of that, and that's very valuable. It could be a local citizen who's documenting their area or the history of the area. It's really about creating a international library of the spoken word on a whole vast different levels of stories.
So what do you think people get from Audio Boo, not just as listeners, but also kind of content creators and sharers? Or what do you think they actually get from it, and why do you think they actually do it in the first place?
I think there's some kind of verite behind it. So, you know, podcasting's a real pain because you have to record it, get onto a computer, then you fiddle around with it for 2 or 3 weeks because you can, and then you have to find someone to host it, and then you have to write an Excel or XML manifest. You know, it's quite a traditional TV, radio production format, which takes a lot of time. And where we come on through is because the kind of cost of the creation and distribution are so minimal, you know, free in fact in most cases, there is no impediment there for you recording. Could be a bird sound, could be a car engine, you know, could be whatever you want. Again, it's a way of you being able to capture the kind of life around you.
Where do you think the line is for sharing? I mean, when you look at kind of Audio Boo's content, so to speak, I mean, it's everything from, you know, very broadcasty sounding podcasts like you've just described, all the way down to kind of very personal recordings where people are sharing sometimes some very delicate moments in their lives. Do you think there's a line for sharing, or do you think people should just kind of get on with it and share?
We very much see ourselves as a technology platform and really shouldn't be getting involved in the content side. There are other people that can do that far better than us. And if we start making, you know, essentially moral or editorial decisions about what people can't do beyond the obvious stuff that's illegal, I think we'd be focused on trying to make the kind of experience as good as possible. You know, people we'll talk on the telephone about a million different things, so why shouldn't they be able to capture audio about it?
Where is Audio going to be, Audio Boo going to be, say, in another 3 or 4 years, do you think?
So we've found a lot of success with people that love audio or love communicating. It's fantastic, but it's still a niche. So I think there is a reluctance among a lot of people to doing audio type stuff because either they hate the sound of their voice or they're not really sure why they're doing it. So I think there is a kind of, for want of a better word, a consumer push, you know, to say, if you're on holiday, it could be an audio postcard, there's this, or, you know, send a birthday message to your mum. So we need to, and particularly the website, which is shit, we need to do a much more focus of teaching is a bad word, but showing people, you know, the many different ways it can be used. We've just done a big deal with the BBC, which is great for kind of pulling in really high-class content. You know, I don't think there's massive, massive jobs to be done. I think, you know, something like Skype, it's simple, right? You can actually make a phone call. If you want to talk to someone, they need to be honest, blah, blah, blah. So it's pushing back on trying to always create too many different technical stuff and actually make the experience better, which is quite difficult. And then keep it simple as possible. I don't think there's any massive changes that need to be. You know, a lot of it will be notifications, so we're working on a strategy for that. So, you know, if you do, I can get a message, you know, just about that boo, or, you know, if it's a concert one or whatever, you know, just engaging with the audience a bit better.
What would you say to someone, because I often find, you know, I'm very much someone who likes to share stuff online. I'm very keen about audio boo. I use it on and off, to be honest. But I also share things elsewhere. But I think you've also got that range of people that you kind of just maybe mentioned who are kind of very shy and very, you know, they have a lot of safety mechanisms, I guess, about wanting to share stuff online. What kind of advice would you give to someone who's kind of right in the middle, who's maybe on that edge of wanting to start sharing stuff, but have still got a few of those safety switches in place, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, one, it's the internet, right? It's a dangerous, mad, disgusting but sometimes incredibly fascinating place. And again, like supports, the same rules you apply in your everyday life, you apply online. You know, someone comes up in the street and says, can they have your telephone number? You know, where do you live? When you go on holiday, you'd be pretty stupid to give it to them. And, you know, it's exactly the same communication and relationship issues that we have in everyday life. Just apply the same online. And if you don't want to share something, don't. There is no magic.
Roger Overall is a photographer, podcaster, and avid Audio Boo user. And recently, he made the following comments in one of his Audio Boo podcasts.
The reason for this Audio Boo is it occurred to me I've done in the last 14 days some pretty amazing things that 10 years ago just wouldn't have been possible for me to do. For instance, I'm talking to you now in what is in essence a mini radio broadcast. Well, I couldn't have done that 10 years ago without being a DJ and having a job with a radio station. In fact, if I want to get really adventurous, I can publish hour-long, half-hour-long proper radio programmes through the internet in the shape of a podcast. And I already do that. I have the Documentary Photographer podcast and I have the Circle of Confusion podcast, both of which are photography-related podcasts. I've also, in the last 14 days, released the third episode, if you include the pilot episode, of a video series that I produce with Peter Cox and Neil McShane, two of my co-hosts on the Circle of Confusion podcast, in fact. Now, 10 years ago, the three of us wouldn't have been able to produce what is in essence an hour-long television programme and distribute it around the world. It'd be absolutely impossible, not unless we were very wealthy and one of us owned a television station and a production company. But these days, you can do these things very cost-efficiently. The other thing I've done in the last 14 days is publish a children's book. Children's book is called Gloomy Doom and Happy Cheer and Mephistopheles 2. And it's a book in five chapters that details the story of a very miserable wizard who gets a very chirpy apprentice. And I've been able to publish that on the Kindle platform, bypassing traditional publishing houses. It also means that I can do this very cost-effectively. Because, look, 10 years ago, I could have published my own book. I could have done vanity publishing. I could have gone to a printer and printed off however many copies that I thought I could foister upon my friends and my family. But I don't need to do that. I don't need to incur that cost anymore. I can, for relatively little money, I can publish on the Kindle platform. I can also publish an e-book online on a dedicated website. And there will be a Gloomy Doom and Happy Cheer website very soon. Now, 10 years ago, or let's be honest, I think almost 18 years ago when I first wrote the book, nobody was interested. And of the 8 publishers I approached that did children's book in the age range I was aiming for, absolutely none of them had any interest in it. Now, you might say it's because the book is rubbish, but I can test the waters now myself, and I can publish it myself, and if it doesn't sell or nobody reads it or I get terrible feedback, then I'll know it's rubbish. But at least I don't have to rely on a traditional publishing house to do it anymore. I'm also able, if I want to publish my own magazines. So, for instance, I've recently started a blog called Cork Foodie at corkfood.ie. And that allows me to scratch my food itch. I have great interest in food and love talking to food producers. I find them fascinating people. They're so passionate about what they do. And, of course, like most people, I love eating food and I definitely love eating good food. So by publishing my own blog, I can do my own writing about food, I can do my own photography about food. Very soon I'll be launching the Cork Foodie podcast, and that allows me to have my own radio show about food. All of these things I couldn't do 10 years ago. I'd have had to become an employee, I'd have had to become a DJ or a journalist with a company. But now, if I decide as a creative I want to do these things, I can, which is fabulous. So it's just got me thinking, really. Oh, and a final thing. I'm working on another ebook, which is called Documentary Wedding Photography from the Heart, which will be a receptacle of everything I know about documentary wedding photography. And my fond hope is to publish at least part of it by the end of the month. I may have to publish it in installments. My fond ambition would be to publish the whole thing in one hit at the end of the month. We'll see how that goes. I've been distracted by a number of other things. But it has made me think, all these wonderful things that I've been able to do and that I dreamt of doing when I was growing up but couldn't because I didn't have access to the production and distribution networks. Now, of course, because of the internet, I do. So here's a question for you. What is it that you wanted to do, or what is it you want to do, that the internet now makes possible for you? Worth pondering.
I contacted Roger and asked him to talk further about his thoughts and his work as a transmedia producer.
What kind of attracted my attention, first of all, was your audio booth, talking about the fact that there are things that you can do now that, you know, or that we can do now that we couldn't do 10 years ago. Can you kind of expand a little bit on what you were talking about? Is there anything specifically that you're doing now that you weren't doing even 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I can. I mean, the audio booth was born out of revelation, really. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm a frustrated non-published writer, and well, non-published until recently. And it just occurred to me that because of the internet and what various platforms are allowing us to do, is we're bypassing previous gatekeepers, or gatekeepers that would have stood between us and realizing our dreams. So there's a lot of people in the world who would like to publish a book, who've written a book and would like to publish it, but can't find a traditional publisher. Similarly, if you're a writer and you have an interest in something and you've always wanted to be published in a magazine, you've always wanted to write an article about something that you're passionate about, and you just haven't been able to get in with an editor who would publish your work and pay you for it. Well, now you can start your blog and you can write your articles and you can publish them. If you're a writer and you've written a book, well, now you can go to the Kindle publishing platform and you can publish your book on Kindle. You can publish your book in iBooks or through Barnes & Noble. Similarly with podcasting, you used to have to go through this gatekeeper called a broadcaster. And the only way really you could have your program on say radio was to be commissioned by a broadcaster. Well, now you have all these podcasting platforms, Audioboo being one of them, which is kind of like a mini podcasting platform, and you can do it. You can do these things. And if you want to do video, which is another thing I'm involved with, well, you don't need to work for a television station. You don't need to get to know a director. You can do it yourself, and you can upload it and distribute it yourself. And that's where that audio boost stemmed from. I just had this revelation, and it's not a new thing. It's not an original thought, but it just did kind of make me think, hey, in the past 2 weeks, I'd released a video, I'd published a book, I'd done podcasts, and I'd written blog posts. So all these things were suddenly covered, and I'd done it myself.
let's talk a little bit about your background and where you started. I mean, is your background specifically in photography, or did you start somewhere else?
My background is as a failed photographer. I'm half Dutch, and I was living in Holland at the time, and I wanted to get into the Photographic Academy, went in through their assessment program, and was told I would never make it as a professional photographer. Nobody would ever buy my pictures. It just wasn't good enough. And unfortunately, I didn't actually believe them, although it really knocked my confidence as a young man.